Today is July the 24th, 1981. This is Madeline Bubel Kep interviewing Otilia, better known as Tilly Botter Noonan, at her home on Madrid Street in Castroville, Texas. I am interviewing for the Castroville Public Library Oral History Project. Ms. Noonan, this is going to be your millinery shop, which you told me about on a previous interview I did with you. But before we get into that, I'm going to go briefly over where you were born and your family background. And what we don't put on this tape, they can check, anyone who wants to know can check the transcript of the other one. Mm-hmm. So where were you born?
I was born here in Castroville.
And
on the 5th day of September, 1900.
Okay. And your parents' names were what?
Joseph Francis Botter. And my mother was Mary Catherine Schmidt.
Okay.
S-C-H-M-I-T-T. And they were both born here. And my father had a stepmother, and my mother had a stepfather. And there's been quite a controversy about that because people can't understand that her name was Schmidt, and she wasn't kin to the Schmidts, you know, to the
younger ones.
Uh-huh. And it just goes on and on and on, controversy. Well, how can she be named Schmidt when her name was Holzhaus? I said her name was not Holzhaus. Her mother married the second time, and she married August Holzhaus.
The second husband?
Her second husband. And that's where all these other children are named Holzhaus. But she went by that name. Well, they called her Mary Holzhaus.
Uh-huh.
And see, she had two sisters who were named Schmidt. Teresa Schmidt Burkhardt, who lived in Mexico for years. Well, in fact, she died in Mexico.
Oh.
And the other one, the little girl, died when she was 5 years old.
The little sister. Oh, the baby sister.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Her name was Johanna.
I see. And how many brothers and sisters did you have? Were there in our children in your family?
We were nine.
Nine children.
Uh huh. Oh, six girls and three boys.
And I think you told me that you lived here in Castroville, and then when you were 10, you moved to Hondo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're getting to the time you came to have your business here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. At what age were you when you came back over
17
here?
17 years old.
And what made you decide to come and open this millinery shop?
Well, one of the reasons I came here was ill health. And somebody had recommended Dr. Whitehead.
Uh-huh.
That he had been very successful in treating this kind of a, I don't know whether it was a disease or what it was, but anyway, and I stayed with my aunt, and she said, you know, if I were you, I'd go into the millinery business. I think you're quite talented in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what gave me the idea. But I came over here for the reason that I wanted to have Dr. Whitehead take care of this infection that I had, lung infection.
I see.
In fact, I still have the scars on my lungs, and I can't donate blood, I can't do this, and I can't do that. But see, the scars are there, but they're dormant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's been a long, long time since then. And the treatment was a horrible thing, because I took, it was unrefined petroleum oil immediately out of the ground, and it was thick and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
First I took it by a spoonful, and
yeah, I'm sure.
So we diluted it, and I could whip it up in water or milk.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that, and it wasn't very long. I didn't have any temperature. Well, it never did run any temperature. You could call it temperature, but my temperature was some.
Yeah. It's amazing some of the things they used and were that successful.
That is right. That is right. And he said that he used that. I think that he came from New Mexico, Arizona when he came here. Mm-hmm. And he says that was all that the Indians were using for pneumonia or anything like that.
Well, I'll say. So your aunt suggested mm-hmm. that you go into the millinery business. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, where was this shop located?
Well, in my father's home.
Okay.
It wasn't a separate shop.
All right.
It was, there were some people living in the home there, and they consented to let me use the big rock room.
And where was this at? What?
Well, it was, I can't remember the streets. It was on the corner there. It was behind the Lutheran Church. It was on the corner facing Keller and Tunder store.
Facing Keller and Tunder store. And that is what is presently was the Tundry store. Is that where it's located, or?
No. It was Keller and Tunder store down. It was west of the Lutheran Church, because my dad had an open lot there, and they would park in there. You know, when mm-hmm. they come to church, they came with horse and buggy, and they would park in there. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, they bought it. The congregation bought it from Dad, and we kept the home. It was in the estate until after Mama died, and then my brother sold it.
What about the old clinic building? It wouldn't have been in there, would it? No, no,
mm-hmm. No. That's where Zierhus had their hat shop.
They had one also, but mm-hmm. yours was...
Oh, yes, mine came way, way later. Mm-hmm. Because I think they must have gone out of business. Oh, I don't know just when, but they didn't have a hat shop here for years when I came.
Now, you're saying a parking area. Was this for the St. Louis Church?
No,
for the Lutheran Church.
The Lutheran Church.
Okay.
See, our home was on the same block with the Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm.
The Lutheran Church was on this corner.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? They used to call it Main Street.
Right. Well, let's call it Main Street. We've had Main Street on a number of tapes.
Mm-hmm. And ours ran from down this way. Main Street ran this way, and our street ran this way.
Oh, I see. Towards the river?
No.
No, the other way.
The other way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other way, towards Cross Hill.
All right. Well, in the area maybe where Woodrow Sharp lives, or where...
He lives a block further west.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I'll tell you now.
The Myers live in a house over there, an old house there. That's right by across from where Billy Foose's tin shop was. Would that be?
Oh, I don't know who lived in it after.
Yeah, well, after okay, we've got a fair idea. All right, so you took one of the rooms.
Mm-hmm. I took the big rock room.
Uh-huh.
See, when my dad bought it, it was a big rock room and a kitchen added to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we didn't use that kitchen. We used the outside kitchen.
Uh-huh.
It was a little kitchen and a porch to itself, and we used that for our dining and cooking. And then that was Mama's room, was a big rock room, and then they added three rooms and a hall and a dining room. That was added later. And a great big long porch mm-hmm. towards the west.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs to the Lutheran congregation now. Because they have their, what used to be our cow pen, that's where they had the rectory for the for the Lutheran Church.
Oh,
see, it was this whole corner over here.
Well, there was a house on that corner that Mrs. Bippert lived in that they tore down.
Yeah, she lived in there.
That's the house.
That's the house.
Torn down.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, now I know.
We never knew that it had a basement underneath, but it did. And I used to play there. It was just, you know, like a little hill. And there was a mulberry tree growing on there, mm-hmm. on this little hill. Mm-hmm. And I always played, that was upstairs in my playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
My kitchen was down below it. And we didn't know until they pulled it down and they dropped the rocks, the beautiful hand-cut rocks down into that hole in there. I went over there out of curiosity to see them. It was under the little kitchen and under that big room.
Now, yes, that's a house that's gone. Right, that's one of the old houses that, and I know now what you're talking about. It's, in other words, it was right. It was on the Lutheran, that whole block the Lutheran Church owns, and directly across from the tin shop that old Billy Foose had. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when we lived there, it was a Keller and Tunder store.
Was in that building.
It was in that building.
Ah, see, mm-hmm. now I didn't know that. Uh-huh. Okay.
See, it was Keller and Tunder had a partnership. They had a store in Lacoste, and in conjunction with this one, they could buy
bulk, yeah.
And then later, I don't know how it happened or why it happened, but they split partnership, and Mr. Keller took the Lacoste store, and Tunder's kept this one. Then years later, they bought the, what was it,
I know quite
two or three things that happened.
Yes, I know you do. I know you do. Okay, what was your initial investment about? Do you have any idea how much money it took you to get started?
Oh my goodness, in those days it took very little, because I got, I bought my cases to put the hats in. They were pathetic looking little things, you know, they were all scarred up on top and everything, but I got them from a place that went out of business,
mm-hmm.
and I paid $5 for the big one and $2 for the little one. Of course, the little one had to be put on the frame, but the big one stood on the floor.
That was a display case?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now then, what kind of materials did you use to make these hats out of?
The handmade hats were made out of lace or chiffon or crepe de chine.
Did you ever use any velvets or anything like that?
No, we didn't use the velvets. In fact, the winter hats were bought already made.
Oh, so some of them you bought ready made, and mm-hmm. some you made.
Some I made.
What colors were they?
Well, mostly pastel, but then the winter ones, they went to the black. People like black winter hats for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was mostly black hats, mm-hmm. especially for the older people.
Mm-hmm.
I cut it off, I want to say so.
Where did you get your supplies from?
I got them from the hat shop in San Antonio. But the ready-made hats that I bought were really from Philadelphia. And one outfit from Illinois, Chicago.
Can you tell me what you had to do to make one of these hats? Okay, when you made the hats, were they specially ordered, or did you make some and display them?
I made some and displayed them.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the hats that I made were ordered, and it was mostly for weddings. You know, for the bridesmaids and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I see.
I made Joe and Lucille shots. They looked like big cakes.
Is that right?
They were very pretty. They were a real soft satin that she had for those. And they were very pretty. Then I made a group for some girl from Lacoste. Somehow or other she was related to is Adolf Tunder, but I don't know the girl's name, but I remember that they wanted everything plum colored, and they wanted me to make hats out of taffeta, and I told them I wouldn't do it.
because you know the taffeta in those days was stiff, because it crinkled, or it really rang a bell when you walked with it. And I wouldn't do it. I told them no, I just wouldn't do it. So they had another conference and they decided to take pastel. So that suited me fine. I could get the material for that, but I wasn't about to make a hat with. Now, yes, a tailored hat I could make out of taffeta, but not, you know, drapes and fur blues and all of that.
You said you made most of them for weddings. Now, what did you have? How long would it take you to make one?
Well, it depended on what they wanted on there, but a hat. I would take the head measurements first, and then I drew the shape of the hat they wanted, and the size of the head, and how far back they wanted the brim, and how far out the brim, and that way I could fix my wires. And it didn't take me very long. I guess it took maybe a day and a half to make the whole hat.
Oh, that was one hat. You started with a wire frame. Did you just have a strand or a roll of wire and go from there with it, make the whole thing?
No. See, the frame of the hat was just the big piece of wire, and then the head part was a small piece of wire that went to the bottom, but it didn't go to the top, it just went to the bottom, and then the buckram went over the top.
I see.
That gave you the form, and from there you just used your material and went ahead. Now, in order to keep that wire from burning through, I had to whip by hand a bias cut material to go on there.
That was around the wire before you covered it with the materials.
Before I covered it with material. It was quite a lot of work, but to me it came handy. Of course I could see a fly up on the ceiling. Now I can't even see when it's sitting on my coffee cup. But it was a pleasure to make those things. It wasn't any drudgery to it at all. And when I didn't want to finish one, I waited until tomorrow to finish it.
Well, what did you charge for one that you made handmade?
Well, it just depended on how much work I had to put in it. But they didn't get too high. The most of them were around $5.
Well, that was quite a bit of money at that time, right?
Oh, my lady, I guess it was. I sold one lady a hat for $10, and you know, everybody in church turned around and looked when she walked in. And I'll tell you who the lady was. She was a stately woman, and I was so glad. She didn't know it, but I think I would have given it to her just to use it as an advertisement. It was Mrs. Ellis Habey. Ellis Habey. She was a... Her maiden name was Raider.
Yeah. Lived at Rio Medina?
They lived up there where the Shots live, up in there.
Yeah, so above Rio Medina. Yeah.
Yellow Banks.
Yes, Ellis Habey. That was Annie Bames, George Bames' wife's mother, I think, right? Yeah, I'm sure that's who it was.
She had quite a number of children.
Yes, that was one of her children.
But she wore that, when she came in, I said, I have the hat for you, and I'm not going to let you try another one on. And she says, let me see it. And she says, this hat is too heavy for me. And I said, it isn't going to kill you to wear it at church, because that's the only place you're going to wear it. You know, she liked for me to tease her. When she'd come to the store over there, I would wave to her and talk to her a few minutes. And she put the hat on, and I said, you don't wear that hat like that. I said, let's try it this way. And I tilted it down just a little bit. And I looked at her, I said, no, let's tilt it this way. And it was better this way. You know, your face, no matter what you look at it, how you look at it, your face has...
Two sides, right.
Different. And then I said, now don't forget, you pull it down a little bit here, not too much, but just a little bit. And so she did. She bought the hat.
Can you describe it?
It was a navy blue. Rice straw, navy blue rice straw.
Mm-hmm.
And the facing underneath was, I don't know what they call it now. It was a tiny, tiny bit tan underneath. It was a very pretty hat.
Tan under the brim?
Mm-hmm.
Did it have a high crown or a flat?
Yes, no, it had a higher crown.
About
4, maybe 5 inches.
Did it have any flowers or anything?
Yes, it had a tiny, tiny flowers, and they weren't on the brim or either on the crown, but they were right down, looked like they were growing out of between
the under the brim of the hat. Oh, I bet that was pretty.
It was very pretty. And it was so becoming for her.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that one? That was a hat you bought,
yes,
for resale.
Uh huh. That was a resale.
And you said that was $10.
Yes, ma'am. That was $10. That was the highest priced hat I ever had.
Well, how many hats did the ladies buy a year, or did they buy one a year, or not even that many?
No, it seemed like if they buy a winter hat, they didn't buy a summer hat.
Mm-hmm.
See, the money was scarce then.
Mm-hmm.
And people did without
mm-hmm.
as much as they possibly could. And then I had 3 or 4, the old ladies, you know, wore the little tiny bonnets, you know, with a veil hanging down the back.
Uh-huh.
And I got to more arguments with them. You know, they thought that they should be like the first one they bought. And I said, well, that veil costs more than your whole bonnet cost.
They wanted it for the same price. What was the hairstyle like at that time?
Well, mostly they had a bun in the back, and they pulled the hair tight, just as tight as it would go. I think they put water on it to hold it in place or something.
Uh-huh.
And then they had this bun back here. I'd either have to move it up or move it down.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason they wore their hats on top of their head. And I had an awful time. I said, you have to pull this hat won't sit like that. You have to pull it down. Put your hair either on top of your head or down in the back. Pull it down, further down.
So at the time you were in business, then they didn't wear the great big bouffant hairdo with the hat sitting on top of it.
Well, it wasn't like the bouffant.
Let's see,
of
what,
today.
That was, I guess, in the.
They had the pompadour.
Yeah,
but it wasn't exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, you know, kind of medium.
Well. When, according to the lady's hat, could people tell? I mean, was it a distinct? Oh, let's see. What word am I looking for? Could you sort of tell how well they were off financially by the type of hat the lady wore? The family did they put a lot of money in hats? In other words, to look good, I guess, is what I'm trying
to
say.
Well, that's the wedding parties did,
mm-hmm.
but the others didn't. I could tell them as far as I could see them when they come in. And why in the world people always ask you to give it a little cheaper? I don't know. But no matter what they look at, just couldn't you give this a little cheaper? And I'd say, no, the price is on there. I have to have that because I've got to live.
That was that must have been a custom or a habit. I know I know some of the older people that would, when even, you know, when I was a young person, or not even that young a person anymore, would go to the grocery store, and no matter what they would buy, exactly. Can't we have it a little cheaper?
Yes. That was quite funny. I was in the store one day at Curran store. See, that was up on this corner,
mm-hmm.
over here across the street from the bank now. but that was Joseph Curran's store. And I was in there one day, and August Mangold, he's little Lee Mangold's daddy, he was a little short, tall, fat. And I was standing there at the counter, and I was talking to some people. And he says, "Ya van salina kung mahrus thing as is a bitchy. Hey, Harish, is to all the kush kumat and saligate time." It just tickled. I said, "August, wouldn't it be better if you could just take the scale and run it back a little bit?"
In other words, when that person comes in.
That person came, And then another, they had an old man that would come in and bring the eggs, and he always brought them in a little paper bag. And he, in those days, you know, they'd take all the eggs and put them in a tub there on the floor. And he'd stand there, and he'd reach down and get some eggs and put them in his pocket. And one day, this August Mangold and my Uncle Arthur was the delivery man. He drove the delivery truck. They walked up to him and mashed those eggs. They ran down his calf's legs.
He would steal a few eggs when no one was looking.
He'd bring a dozen to sell for money.
Yeah.
And then he'd steal that many to take home. Oh, gosh. And he thought nothing of it.
No, no.
They didn't think it was stealing. There were a lot of them there, so he just took a few.
Right. Well. Also, I think I've heard this story that some of the old timers would, when the setting hen was through setting and the eggs wouldn't hatch, they didn't have any qualms at all about including those in with the good eggs.
Good eggs.
Uh-huh. Good grief. Oh. Well, was each hat that you sold a different style?
No, that was when the Pope bonnet hat came in.
Oh.
Or a shepherdess hat. That's what it was called then.
Oh.
You know, they were a little sharp back and that, like a little bonnet.
Right. Would it have a bow tie under the neck or not?
Sometimes. Some of them did. Some of them didn't. But that was the best seller that I had.
So they were pretty much alike then because
of the
style.
It was style. It was fashion to wear them.
Well, how long did you stay in this business?
Well, let's say from 17 to 20 when I got married.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun.
I'm sure you did. How many customers did you average a week? Can you remember that?
Oh my goodness, I can't remember that. Just before Easter, during Holy Week, I had quite a bit of work. Mm-hmm. During Holy Week and week before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was slow. It's just like, the June weddings, and then, which usually occurred on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And, let me see, that was it. And then sometimes they bought for the 25th of August, they would come in and want a straw hat.
Mm-hmm.
But not too many of them. That was just the elite that bought a new hat for 25th of August.
There weren't that many elite, I don't suppose. Did the ladies always wear a hat to church?
Yes. They wore a covering on their head to church. The first time I came to St. Louis Church and saw the women without hats, it nearly floored me.
Mm-hmm. So that was one reason for a hat, especially, was to go to church.
Yes, it was.
You said that you made a lot of hats for weddings, and you mentioned that you made Lucille Shearhart and Joe the hats for Lucille Shearhart and Joe Schatz.
Wedding.
Could you describe those to me, Mrs. Noonan?
They were short back sailor hats. And they were made out of a real soft satin.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also draped and fastened, to the frame of the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And they were you know, like whipped cream. Very much like most of the modern day cake decorations.
Oh, I bet that was beautiful. And what colors were they?
They were white. They were all white. Her bridesmaids were dressed in white.
Oh, and the fabric was what now, did you say?
Real soft satin.
Oh, I bet that was beautiful.
Very pretty. Mm-hmm.
Did they have anything on the hat other than just...
No, they were just the white hat.
No flowers?
No flowers, no nothing. No, they carried bouquets. Mm-hmm. The bridesmaid all carried bouquets. Mm-hmm.
And how many, do you remember how many there were?
I think she had four or five. I can't remember that well.
And what year was that? Do you recall that?
Oh, my gosh.
It's probably...
I guess it was in 1919.
Mm-hmm.
It was shortly before I got married, when they were married. They were married, I guess it was in 1919. I married in 20, and I imagine it was in 1919.
Well, the hats you're describing sound so much like the hats that on the pictures of my mother's wedding. They were a big frame like that, and they were covered with a soft, it looked like like you said, the crepe de chine.
Uh-huh, crepe de chine. Now, another thing that they used to have a lot, I never did work with it because it would fuzz out, was silk mull. It was called silk mull.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a soft fabric. But, you know, when you cut it, we didn't have pinking shears in those days.
Mm-hmm.
When you cut it, you had to allow that much because it would keep raveling out. And I never worked with it. I worked with it there in San Antonio a couple of times. But
oh, did you work in San Antonio?
Yes, I worked in San Antonio. Not very long. I don't guess I worked there about 6 weeks. I didn't like to work in San Antonio.
Is that where it is? That, did you sort of train there before you started?
Well, I was a sales lady.
Oh.
There.
Mm-hmm. And,
with Mrs. Moore.
And where was that located?
I was located on South Alamo Street.
So you sort of had an idea about hats from working there.
Well, I did, and then Aunt Addie had seen some of the, well, in fact, I wore a hat that I had, you know, copied from them.
Mm-hmm.
And she liked it. She says, it looks very nice. It looks very girly, Sean Hughes. Oh, boy.
So that's what sort of gave you the idea then to go, mm-hmm, in business for yourself, mm-hmm, is because, mm-hmm, of the job, mm-hmm, in San Antonio.
Yes, I stayed with my sister. She had